Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, y'all? You know, I had to get the music started. I had to get Chuck D on the air for y'all to listen to a little bit. This is Citizen Payne, Eric Citizen Payne. I keep saying my little social media name or my Facebook name to you, but I'm K's son. That's the main important thing and the only thing that's important to me. One of the only things that's important to me. This is K's son and friends with the legendary historian, my man Byron Saunders, and the legendary newsman Wayne Gilman. And we are live tonight. Today is the 28th of October, and there's a lot of stuff going on. A couple more days. What did they say? 6 days until the election. The election. I put down some of our talking points tonight. First, we want to give praises to our brother that was shot again by the police, Walter Wallace Jr. in Philadelphia. And if you saw the video, you saw that the cops really didn't have to shoot him. Not like that, right? They could have backed up, could have kept backing up, they could have tased him, whatever, you know, but there is always the most extreme punishment when it comes to dealing with black people. That's just a fact. Them's is just the facts. There always is the most extreme measures in dealing with African Americans, from what I have seen during the course of my life with the police system. And many of you know, obviously, being Kay's son, my mother was on the radio for a very long time on WLIB, and very little, it has been a constant theme of life in America for black people, that we receive the harshest treatment. We receive the always to 10. There seems to be no middle ground. If you do your history and you look up, the youngest person to be executed in the United States was a 14-year-old black boy during the Jim Crow era to get the chair. So when I deal with us, there's always the most extreme measures, right? And of course it makes sense because, as I've said before and as you should know by now, that one of the tip pillars of the police department was to keep black people down, to keep black people in check. It was one of the pillars of America. So the police department, being one of the founding organizations, one of the main organizations of America, they're going to toe the party line, right? So if we know the history, keeping black people illegal to be black, illegal to walk around to be free and black, and throughout the 400 years how that has evolved, and the police, being the police, they enforce the law. They are the enforcement arm of, as I have said before, the enforcement arm of white supremacy. If that was not the case, then you would have more people of color in the police departments having gone. Those of you that are my age and older and even a little bit younger can remember watching old movies growing up, and when they showed if you watched the Bowery Boys like I did back in the day, or some of those old movies, the cops were always white, and they always presented them to be Irish for whatever reason. I mean, obviously it's a historical fact in a lot of those old movies that used to play when I was a kid. And so it appears that that is the mission of them. Certainly if not all white dudes. I'm not going to say all white cops do that, because clearly there's good cops, and these instances that seem to continue to pop up almost on a daily basis here in this country don't reflect probably the majority of them. And I saw a white cop on one of the on the social media platforms talking about he never fired his gun. Never fired his gun. The black guy is not always your enemy. He was saying this to these new cops now. He was a cop in the 70s in New York for the Bronx, straight New Yorker Bronx cop, dude. And he was just running it down. He's like, no, that's not necessary. It's not necessary to always be that way. And if you see the treatment, all you got to do is look at the umpteen million examples on the internet and on the social media platforms of the differences of treatment between white and black people from the police. There are instances when police have abused white people as well, but for the most part, from what I see over and over again, is that black people get the harshest treatment. I saw a video on the internet, on I think maybe a social, Facebook or whatever, of a cop who was dealing with a white guy, like he might have been in his mid-20s or whatever, stopped him for whatever. It was in a park somewhere, and a guy was up to no good, and he had a knife. And the cop was, you know, talking to him, I chased you because this and that, yada, yada. Tried to tell the guy to turn around and let me put some handcuffs on you. The guy stabbed him in the neck. Stabbed dude in the neck. It wasn't a devastating stab. Just it must have poked him a little bit because the kid ran off and the cop ran after him. Stop, stop, with his gun out. Stop, stop, stop. And still, when he got close to him, still dealing with him gently after being stabbed in the neck. And I understand that everything, all of these things are individual, right? If you get the right individual at the wrong time or the wrong individual at the right time, then stuff is going to happen, right? Like I said, not all white cops. And this guy, I don't know if he was white or Hispanic or whatever. I know he wasn't a black cop. But judging from his body cam and his arms I saw, it seemed that he had a little tint to his skin tone. But it always ends up being the most extreme treatment that African Americans get. And people wonder why people get fed up. Violence is never the answer. Yes, we all know that. But when violence is being perpetuated on you as a system, what do you do? Clearly, these individuals in Michigan were willing to exhort to violence because they're mad at their governor because she wanted people to wear masks and be safe. There's an issue that the dominant culture has with someone telling them what to do, right? The dominant culture has a real issue with their liberty, and you can't tell me. And I think that's a direct residual effect of America, of people coming over here and they conquer a country, they invade a country, and they establish a set of rules for themselves, not for everybody else. And so when you tell them, hey, wear a mask, be safe, I'm going to do what I want to do. We're living kind of still in a more civilized version of the Wild Wild West, you know, the way the country is. Clearly, that's the case. But I don't want to get too further along. I want to get Byron in here. I don't know if we're going to have Wayne. I assume we'll have Wayne. But let me get Byron's thoughts, because I know he's heated about the issue as well. Brother Byron, there you go. Yeah. Byron Saunders. How you doing, brother?
That's another blessed day in paradise somewhere. You know, we here in the cesspool of our country, Washington, D.C., just to remind people, you're right, 7 days from now, we would have made a choice and decision for which some 100 million people will have voted early by that time. So thank you for showing your power. But today, October 28, 2020, the death clock is still ticking and clicking and conducting body bags all across the country. We know we have over 8,879,060 people who are infected, closing in on 9 million people. Over 230,000 people are dead. The national unemployment rate is up over 65 million. And all of this is counting, folks. And so, you know, let's do the nation a favor. On November the 3rd, you know, this overwhelming putrid stench of corruption, collusion, cronyism has engulfed the Oval Office and the Republican Party. So on November the 3rd, what are we going to do? On November the 3rd, flush the turds. Flush the turds on November the 3rd. Vote. Vote now if you can. Vote definitely on that day, make your voice count. And that's what it's really all about, Eric. It comes down to in the playbook. And here we go.
Yeah, since you jumped into voting, I put a little, when I put the description of what we want to talk about, some of the issues, I did talk about, I wrote down here voting, the price paid for voting rights. And it's interesting. It's interesting to me who paid the steepest price for people to vote in this country. We know it's black people, right? Just, I mean, there's no disputing that. That African-Americans' fight to get the vote has been arduous, for lack of a better. That's a $50 word, y'all. Y'all do shots or whatever. That's a $50 word. It has been arduous, to say the least, that we have paid the price, our community, so everybody could vote. The voting rights were got on our back. I know women didn't have the right to vote back then, but even then, when they were fighting for the right to vote, they excluded the black woman. The black sisters, in those marches they had, they made the sister march by herself. So racism superseded all of that. And voting, to me, the price was paid by us. And so what happens is that when we talk about voting and my God, any African-Americans that talk about they having to vote, there was blood was lost for that. People paid with their lives free to vote. So you should go vote. However, I do have my questions about it. But it's the way to exercise power, and that's the game we play. I was very young, the family I was brought up into, so I was aware of politics very early on, as I'm sure you were, Byron. And people of our age have parents who had no choice but to either get involved or go along with life as it was. But black people, even black people, rank-and-file black people on the street, were more aware, I believe, of the situation that black people found themselves in than modern day, that we, since the time I've been born and this age that I've lived through. Because it was so obvious back in those days, right? Jim Crow, all of these restrictive rights, black people down south having a problem registering to vote, the civil rights era. So it was really obvious where you stood. You know, you had to get on the sidewalk, get off the sidewalk. Negro as a white person is walking. So it was really obvious. And so when I was born and my generation comes along and we become of age, we think it's all going to be okay. I can remember literally thinking that it's all going to be okay by the time I grow up. But you know what? What makes me any different than my ancestors for 400 years who came before me? And that's what a lot of these people, a lot of young people now, a lot of people realize like I've talked about before, that this might be something you have to deal with your entire life. The struggle continues. We've heard that phrase before. The struggle continues. There's a reason why the elders said that, because what they learned and was passed down to them from people before. I remember my father telling me about when he was a young man downtown North protesting something, and my great-grandfather, who was my father's obviously grandfather, was getting off the bus to go to work or do whatever, and he was, you know, what are you doing down here protesting? Because that's what the young ones were doing then. And so all of these distractions that we have can distract us from what's really important. You know, the social media, the sports, all of this stuff, the fake freedom that you have, just as long as you don't get out of line too much. All of this stuff, you know, give people just enough so they could survive and deal with their daily lives and go to work and deal with their families, give them just enough so they don't understand really what's going on in the world. And so voting that's become that way, right? There's loopholes in voting. That's why you have the Electoral College. My father, I want to go back to that. Originally, my father told me about voting when I turned 18. He made sure that I registered to vote and that I went out there and voted. And we were talking one time, I remember, in the car, and I said, well, that guy should win, shouldn't he? He's got the more votes. He said, well, it's not really like that. You have the Electoral College. And when he explained it to me, I didn't say it out loud, but I wanted to say, man, that's some bullshit. when he broke down what the Electoral College was. And it is. Byron, I'm going to let you get into it, elaborate in a minute of what the Electoral College really is, but it's just another way, a loophole that the people in power that have been in power, that might have come into power in the development of this nation, have put in to protect themselves. That's why you have this woman, Amy Coney Barrett, on the Supreme Court now, because they put loopholes in there. And you have to know the game. You got to know all the game. That's why the Republicans have been playing their game for the last 30 years to control the courts. Byron, that's something you've been talking about since day one. But yeah. But go ahead and break down, you know, the historical aspect of the Electoral College, so anyone is listening that might not understand it.
Yeah, it's interesting that we would go back to this conversation, because, again, how does a constitutional government, which abides by one man, one vote, but the Electoral College, back when established as we as a young nation, trying to determine the wealth and the wealth of a southern gentry who was committed to an agrarian culture. In other words, growing tobacco, growing sugarcane, growing cotton, and having a labor force created just for that, a free labor force. And so the southern aristocracy, those landowners, got Congress to engage in what was called the Three-Fifths Law. The Three-Fifths Law meant that every plantation owner had a slave could add a three-fifths of a person to their voting count. Now, what does this all mean? Well, just because when it comes down to the presidential election, now you're talking about the Electoral College, for which there are 270 more votes that are sparsed out amongst the nation based on population. Now, why does the census become so incredibly important? See, all these things, Eric, are looped in together so that when you get to the electoral vote, as it was historically began, was to compensate for slave labor in the Senate and the House of Representatives by a three-fifths law that ultimately came up with 270 votes to represent those areas who were agriculturally bound and those areas who were industrial bound. So why is it that New York and California have more electoral votes than anybody else? Population. Once again, number of population people in state of New York and California commands that they have a huge amount of electoral votes. But this was all, of course, not at the time that the West was won at that time, but understand this was Civil War, post-Civil War. This is Reconstruction time, and we can be pre-Civil War. And so counting slaves was not one man, one vote. It was three-fifths of an extra person in a Southern opportunity to balance the power in Congress and the Senate. And it has
So let me stop you right here. Let me just ask and ask questions that people might have. So the slaves were counting, the slave owners were counting their slaves as property, but three-fifths. So what is that? How many slaves did they need to make a whole three-fifths of the math? So what they needed? Three slaves, four slaves? I don't know that math.
Right. That's a higher math situation. And that's why we're supposed to be so valuable, is because
but just real briefly, the southern slave owners put them on equal balance with the northern industrial, right?
Exactly.
They were able to count their slaves as a person to give them a larger population to get more electoral college votes, right? That's what you're saying, right?
It was to balance Congress and their nascent way of trying to appease the southern aristocracy, who were landowners. The barons of North were the industrialists, and there were more people in the who are now migrating to the larger cities to live.
Right.
So that depreciated the number of people population-wise to the southern states, because those people
could count.
Yes. So that now the southern landowners said, but wait a minute, Hold on. In order for us to have equal power in Congress, we got to be able to count something other than the few people that are down here, because we own land, we're feeding the country, and we got these slaves. So let us have a population adjustment. Sounds kind of bizarre, but that's exactly what they did.
So instead of giving black people just the right to vote,
yeah,
they couldn't do that, right?
Right.
Because if they had done that, all those slaves they had down there would have balanced that power out in a real equal setting of one man, one vote, right?
Exactly.
That's what I'm assuming. And so if that had been the case, then we would have an earlier reconstructive era, right?
Exactly. So all this was back in 1787. It's called the Virginia Plan. It's part of the Constitutional Convention. The Virginia Plan, conveniently enough, was written by those guys south of the border, Jefferson, James Wilson, Madison. All of these guys were in battle. So when you see them play Hamilton, understand this was the element of one of the things they were engaged in, trying to determine how do we figure this out. And they decided, of course, once Napoleon was defeated by the Haitians, and this country engaged in a massive racial profiling. They let slave catchers go into free cities like Washington, D.C. Remember Solomon, 12 years a slave, free man.
Yep.
He was a result of those slave laws, those slave catcher laws that allowed free roaming posses, which is like what they're trying to reestablish right now with these idiots walking around with guns. So that you understand, there is a full connection to everything that's going on right now. It's not an anomaly, and they're trying to start the second Civil War, or they want to continue the Civil War, because the Southern strategy has always been wrapped up in the Virginia Plan, which was to have free labor, slave labor, so that they could match the industrialist North with machines and, of course, manufacturing by way of mass production. See, a lot of this is capitalism versus socialism. Damn right it is. Okay.
Right.
So stop running away from it, because it's the politics of what really is, not what you fantasize in declaring yourself a capital market when you all it is an extended version of slave labor. That's all it is.
Excuse me. So they were the South was the ones making all the money that was driving the economic engine of the country, right? And
well,
so
the,
that's
the,
why
yeah,
when cotton came when cotton
farm,
yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
See, the South had the farmlands, North had the industrial revolution. In the industrial revolution was beginning, factories were going up, unions were beginning to protect labor, and then there was a whole nother battle, labor versus free labor, which is what they call right to work states, because there's to keep the unions out. That was the other trade up that they had with the So all this was going on at the same time.
Let's back up a little bit before that, but before you get the Industrial Revolution in the North, right?
Yeah.
You have the agricultural society. Cotton is king, right? The cotton crop is such a wealth-producing crop that it created the foundation for a lot of these other businesses that were invested in cotton production, right? A lot of insurance companies that wrote the policies for a lot of these slave-owning states that was the finance that created the money, and eventually when the Industrial Revolution hits and everything starts going north. But initially, it was the cotton industry that created a lot of the wealth, right? And
well,
so that's why we'll talk about.
Yeah, because understand this, it was the constitutional portion of this. It's Federalist Paper number 39, rather. Madison, James Madison, argued that the Constitution was designed to be a mixture of state-based and population-based government. Congress would have two houses. The state-based would be the Senate, and the population-based would be the House of Representatives. Meanwhile, the president would be elected by a mixture of two modes. So Hamilton, the Federalist paper number 68, laid out what he believed were the key advantages to the Electoral College. The electors come directly from the people and them alone. For that purpose only, and that for that time only, it kind of avoided a party-run legislature or a permanent body that could be influenced by foreign interests. Doesn't sound kind of familiar? Influenced by foreign interests before each election. Hamilton explained that the election was to take place among all the states, so no corruption in any state could taint the great body of the people in their selection. So the choice was to be made by a majority of the Electoral College, as majority rule is critical to the principles of our Republican government. Now, Hamilton argued that the electors meeting in the state capitals were able to have information unavailable to the general public. Hamilton also argued that since no federal office holder could be an elector, none of the electors would be beholden to any presidential candidate. Now, when you get to gerrymandering and you get to redlining, now you can see how all of this can lend itself
right
to perverting a system as out of control as it is right now, which is why.
But let's before you kind of jump ahead a little bit in your historical things,
yeah,
right? Before you get into gerrymandering and redlining. But we know that with the Electoral College, right? And that was,
yeah,
that, I mean, from what you're explaining and the initial thinking of it sounds correct and sounds fair when you think about it. Even though the electors, unfortunately, the electors were privy to information that the general population was not, you know, and we know that back in those days you had to be the landowner to be one of the people that were signed or be able to vote back then, had to be a property owner, person of status. And so when the electors come in and they have information that's not accessible to the general public, right, that leads the general public out of it. But if we come forward all of these years later, the general public is ignorant to a lot of facts, right? And that's kind of what I'm talking about in terms of having a country where there really is kind of a facade of one person, one vote, the majority rules. Because what we've learned, to jump ahead where you jumped, that in recent elections, the electors actually changed the votes of the will of the people.
Yeah.
You know, the electors were supposed to vote in the direction of the majority of the votes. Whoever won the majority of votes in the state, the electors from whatever area would vote in that direction, right? But we know that in certain elections, the electors asserted the will of the people and voted for who they wanted to vote. So even that system was bastardized to a certain degree and used to the advantage of individuals that were in power. And so the whole system, when you think about it, that's why I've often said that how America, we have a public face, a PR face, and we got another face, right? That's how stuff really does it. Like in the room, you talk about Hamilton, you know, and I'm thinking of the play where they talk about In the Room Where It Happened, which is the title of John Bolton's book, right? Yeah, we could all talk about this stuff right here while we're standing in front of the public and everybody. But once we get back in that room, here are the deals we're going to make. And that was the nature of American politics, right? That the individuals in power basically were going to do what they wanted to do and keep the people, the masses, ignorant of what is really going on. Now, since we're on this line of discussion, for the sake of argument, not everybody has the wherewithal. It's just like being in America now, and you get these people who will make these comments about things, and you could tell they're ignorant to the facts, right? It's like we jokingly talk about Byron having a poll tax on all these ignorant people that they shouldn't get to vote because they're so stupid or so ignorant to the facts. I'm not going to say stupid. Stupid is when you keep doing the same thing, crazy, over and over again. And there are some stupid individuals out there, stupid because of their racism makes them stupid, their hatred makes them stupid, because clearly if you were being smart about things, then this guy that's currently in office, you probably wouldn't vote for him, right? unless he felt he felt some need. It's like when we watch TV and we watch Trump go to these rallies, even though everybody in the audience knows he had COVID, knows that COVID. Even if you just do some basic look around your environment. I don't know. Do your own kind of reason. Listen to your own heart, your own ability of observation. A lot of people are getting sick. A lot more people are getting sick. And for people just to refuse to accept the facts, right, to refuse to see what they see. And so they're going to go to this guy's rallies because, you know, the press are fake news. But still and yet, you got cases of COVID rising in your community. But you're not going to see that. You're going to look away from that and listen to whatever this guy is saying. So therefore, that leads me back to the fact that some individuals just don't, which makes sense why they developed Electoral College and they had certain privy to certain information that the general public didn't have. Because not everybody is able to make sound decisions. Not everybody, unless you have all of the information, like when people try to do their budget in their households, right? When you have all of the information, you can make a sound decision. But not everybody has all the information, and clearly not everybody wants all of the information. And we've gotten to a point now where, because of the cult of personality of this individual, he's caused people, like throughout history, right? One of the individuals in history, Trump is, that have caused people not to believe what they see, not to believe what they're experiencing in their own life on an everyday basis. Because, you know, if you watch TV.
Consider this. You're hitting on a point that's very, very real, because yesterday at a Trump rally in Omaha, Nebraska, he's stranded,
mm-hmm.
hundreds of Trump supporters stuck in the cold for hours when buses couldn't reach Omaha rally because the buses hadn't been paid for. They left them there at the rally. These are senior citizens out in the cold, freezing.
Yep.
Some of them had to go to the hospital. So here your most ardent supporters out there, and you're pissing all over them. This is an evil individual. Nobody in the campaign gave a damn about these people. They came to see him. This happened last night.
Yeah.
It's like,
but they are
talking about the humanity and the evil that exists in mankind. That's evil. My God.
Yeah. But they don't care. They're like down to come out. Here's my thing. If you really cared about the people, if you're really concerned and you wanted to have these rallies, why can't you have everybody spread out? Why can't you tell people, you know, everybody, we're going to need you to spread out a little bit. You can still go to see the people, but just have them spread out a little bit. But that requires someone who's concerned about someone other than themselves. Are you really trying to be a public servant? Or are you trying to fill? And we know this guy's not a public servant. There's nothing about him at all that you could ever look into his history or his life history or family history that says we're going to serve the public. We're going to make money and build a business and make money and serve the public that way. Yeah, but there's no indication that Donald Trump has ever done anything just out of the sheer kindness of his heart to help people. And let me give out the phone number right now, because if somebody got some information and some proof, I would encourage you to call in and tell me about it. 323-679-0906, 323-679-0906. Please, by all means, call and let me know if you can, in anywhere in history, know that this man did anything where he was not going to get something out of it, just for out of the kindness of his heart to help people. Point that out to me, because I don't think it's possible, you know? I mean, you got his son-in-law. I mean, just the fact that they're willing to believe idiot logic, right? Idiot logic says we have more cases because we do more testing. So if I follow that line of thought, that means that the tests are the thing that caused the COVID. So if I don't take a COVID test, I'm not going to get COVID, right? That's what you're saying, Mr. President, right? It's like that old joke when you go in and said, I went into my doctor and I said, Doc, it hurts when I do this. And he said, don't do that. Idiot logic. Repeat stuff. I mean, and it sounds good when he first says it. You know, that's a hustle. That's a con. You know, when he first ran the line, you know, we have more testing because we got such a great system. We have more cases because we do more testing. And these people are like, yeah, that's kind of right. Yeah, if we didn't test. But then when you say it out loud three or four times, no. That's idiot logic.
What are you smoking? Please stop.
Yeah.
This is the bad stuff, y'all. Don't do this stuff, okay?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would encourage, it is my duty as a fellow patriot to encourage other people, even though we're on opposite sides of the aisle, don't fall for the idiot logic. You know?
Right.
And I'm convinced that this guy is trying to, clearly they're trying to infect the nation. I mean, maybe that's their tactic.
Their whole concept is driven by this crowd immunity concept, which is like trickle down economics. This one says, let's just get everybody.
Another piece of idiot logic, trickle down.
Yeah, exactly.
You might as well say crumbs off the table economics. But
crumbs off the table. When
Reagan came up with that one, it was like, wow, really? Trickle down? The average person's got to wait for you guys to just trickle down, right? But anyway, go ahead, Byron.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
This is the pandemic of stupidity that is currently embracing our world, in which you really people. So we're not going to try to control the virus. We're just going to throw in our hat and say, I give up. That's basically what the Democrats are claiming the Republicans are doing right now, and that's exactly what they're doing. Because if crowd immunity suggests you have to be sick in order for that concept to kick in, then let's just go and infect everybody. So I'll send the vice president out, flies will sit on his head, you know what I'm saying? He's infected.
Yeah.
He comes there with a pink eye. Come on,
yep.
If you look up the effects of COVID-19, both of those, I'm talking about the pink eye, and he had a crap on his head. He's obviously using crap because flies are really comfortable there. And so basically the side effects and the effects of COVID-19, everybody in his office is sick. Everybody that travels with the president is sick. The president is sick. He may not have the COVID-19, but his brain is fried from taking the hydroxychloroquine and he, whatever, the other drug that just got proven not to be as effective as everybody thought it was. So he's walking around with a cocktail that's lethal.
Yeah.
Okay?
How often we take medicine and every commercial you hear, they have a quick list of all the side effects that could happen. And you know, I heard on one of the news programs that the president was talking about, I had a team of 12 doctors, yada, yada. I mean, the tone deafness of and maybe the lack of observation of people to say, wow, this guy, you got 12 doctors. I don't have any. You know, I mean, just kind of to be able to perceive that and digest it. And for that to be overwhelmed and overcome by your hatred or your blind allegiance to somebody, right? And it's almost as if that whole, I'm telling you, the whole white supremacy system has done a real job on not only black people, of course, but white people too. Because they're willing to believe, a lot of them are willing to believe anything in the name of keeping our America, and you know, we're not communists, and so anytime someone, you know, it's just like, you know, what Trump is doing now, which is no different than what people have done throughout the history of this country. When somebody comes up with a different idea or doesn't agree with the party line, they start making up things about them and call them, you know, subversive or communists or socialists or put all of these labels. That's why what they're trying to do with Joe Biden now, right? When we know that the biggest beneficiaries of some sort of socialist system in the United States are the big businesses that have been bailed out.
Yeah.
The farming industry that has get those a lot of that money that they were getting to be bailed out. But that's a little bit different, you know? And so it's interesting.
Speaking of the economy, this is the third day the stock market has closed down. Be careful.
Right.
Watch what happens, people. This was and it closed down 800 points. The Dow closed down today.
The casino.
Yeah, the Dow closed today at 943 points down. That's the highest it's been in since probably the beginning of the COVID. But the last 3 days, the market has closed down. It was down to 26.5 now.
Let's talk about, well, the issue, Mr. Kushner, the Trump's son-in-law, when he talked about Trump has a plan for black people, but they've got to want to be, he can't want them to be more successful than they want for themselves, which is probably one of the more racist things, or just a number of racist things that this jackass has said. Just the things that people say in the quiet moments, or the things that people say out loud, or just kind of off the cuff, really tells you where they're coming from. That black people have to want to be, he can't want to be them to be more successful than they want for themselves. It's like, what? And so when you get individuals like this and you have him because he knows Ice Cube, or he might have met 50 Cent or whatever the hell is going on, unfortunately, individuals like that cannot be trusted because you know they're trying to pimp you. They're trying to use you. And so a lot of these brothers that, you know, that want to speak up for the Republicans, and a lot of these black people that somehow, some way have decided that they want to vote for Republicans, that's the thing that they seem to forget, that they're just using you. These people don't really care about you. It's that same vibe of, like, I know two black people. Someone said, I know two black people. I have black friends, so I can't be racist. Just because you're cool with an individual doesn't mean that you have a negative image of the group as a whole, because America forces the group as a whole to be demonized. And so people, that's why these people separate, compartmentalize in their brain. While they can love Michael Jordan, but hate all the black people in a certain area, whatever, you know? The whole thing about, you know, we'll try to cancel LeBron because he wants people to vote. And these people talk about shut up and play basketball, shut up and do the sports. So we don't want to hear you athletes what you have to say. We just want you all to entertain us, Negroes. You know, we're bouncing around a lot of different things. But, you know, all of these things, all of the things that we're talking about are things that people need to consider when you're thinking about how to approach. I guess what I want people to walk away with, what we want people to walk away with, is to understand a lot of the things that go on in this country, and really understand how America runs, and then you could come up with a plan of action on how to deal in this society. You know, and there are a lot of ways to use the laws that are available to us. We have to go through a lot more conniptions than people, but there are a lot of ways that you can use some of these laws to your advantage, you know? I mean, if Cube gets this guy to be down and you know, listens to him and come up with some sort of plan that helps African Americans, fine. But don't count on it. So have an alternative plan to flip the game and be the spook who sat by the door. You feel what I'm saying, right, Byron?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a moment where, if you notice, those who are really believers of and stewards of the planet, they're doing the right things right now. They're harvesting, they're feeding, they're sheltering, they're clothing, they're assisting, giving aid, they're protecting. These are the things that we're supposed to be doing right now, building walls. You know, yeah, a pandemic is one thing, but listen, what happens, I believe, we all know about the zombie nation. We got the walking dead out there. But believe me, they're walking alive, more of us than there are of them. And you're seeing an awakening that's almost instantaneously sweeping across not just our nation, but around the world. Everybody's watching this, Eric. This country's election is more than just a democracy. There's a lot on the line right now that is both of economic, social, spiritual, educational values that are exponential, and it's not just for the simple man or the common man. It's for every man, and the adjustments being made are not being made by the people who are in power. They have no control of what's going on. You know, it's like that program of, you know, one, 5-5 program that just always starts off with, well, you've never been there before. Well, folks, we have never been down this road before where everything is hitting the fan at the same time. Pandemic, economy is tanking. You've got fires in the West. You got floods and hurricanes in the South. You've got snow about to happen up in the Far East because of the hurricane that's in the South right now. And you've got a flu season that's hitting the pandemic season. And by the end of the year, we'll have 400,000 people dead. But here's the encouraging signs. Think about this. By the time we get to the election next Tuesday, over 100 million people would have already voted. Eric, this is unprecedented. We've never been down this road in our entire 240-some year nation.
That's right. This is the highest voting turnout. We've got a nation of some 320 million people, and almost 100 million people have voted. It's the hugest turnout at this time, because we know that during the last election, when Trump and Hillary went head-to-head, it was approximately 130 million Americans voted. So if we've got almost a third, almost half of that now, you can imagine what's going to be going on within the next week when all the votes are counted. And I would just encourage people to stay awake and aware to watch what these guys do, because I totally feel that these individuals, like I've been saying when my mom was still living, that if they can put enough people in enough places to go along with the coup, and I've been, I've been saying that he's trying to put all of his chess pieces in place so he can take over, right?
Yeah.
Which is what he was trying to get, doing the mob boss thing. Tried to get Comey to be loyal to him. Tried to get all these people to be loyal to them. Barr, the attorney general, handle that. Put the individuals on the Supreme Court. Handle that. That's done. Put all these federal judges in. That's done. So you're making all these check moves, these checkmate moves, so no one could come against you and try to use and play the game and try to win. They keep checkmating everything. And the only difference is in this game, these are the individuals who don't mind cheating. They're not playing by any rules. Clearly, when you have individuals that are...
They're not playing by the rules, but they're being checkmated every move they've made. And it's coming from a natural order of life itself, because they still think, man still thinks he can manipulate time and space.
And nature.
Oh, my God. When will we ever learn? Because you cannot manipulate the mankind. It's out of your pay grade. You're not smart enough to manipulate that. You barely can manipulate your own existence, let alone trying to do the things that a supreme entity is already engaged in doing. So trying to understand the dynamics of what's really shaking out of the trees right now and how things are really being adjusted by nature's order, not man's order, by nature's order, sit back and watch and enjoy the show, because this is a show you ain't never seen before. You think virtual reality is incredible and these PlayStations? Wait till you see what happens and shakes out of the trees after next week.
Yeah.
You really enjoy them? Right. See, Eric, it's like we were just all panting and waiting. Wait till next week. Well, excuse me. Say that again.
I didn't quite understand it. Say that again.
Everybody's like saying, well, wait till next week. Well, next week is going to happen, guaranteed. It's what happens after the 3rd of November, okay?
Right, and you have people, this is what I'm talking about, the Wild West, because you have individuals that want to show up at polling places with guns to intimidate people.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I find when people try to control people, right? It's like the individuals who want to go and stand on a corner. This is how you can tell that they're concerned about losing. And they want to win at all costs, because when you have individuals who go someplace to support someone, right, and they'll go and they'll have a rally. But when they choose to have a rally right across the street from where the other people are having a rally, you're trying to say something, right? I mean, I've never been one that would go to, say, someone who I didn't support, like, all these people were showing up at Trump. When he was running for office, all these people were showing up to his rallies and interrupting the rallies, or would come and interrupt the president when they're speaking. I was never that person. You know, that's their thing. They're having their for their supporters. I'm not a supporter, so I'm not going to go. But when you have these individuals who want to go and protest in people's face or express their support of another individual in the face of people who are supporting the opposition, they're trying to instigate something, right? They're trying to start, jump something off. I saw on the internet where in Georgia that a bunch of Trump supporters went and had a little on-the-corner rally across the street from HBCU. Now, why in the hell would you do that unless you're trying to instigate something?
Right.
Why would you just have your rally? You can have your rally right on, you know, and that's what a lot of people are doing now. They're confronting, both sides are confronting. I just looked at another little video where they had Biden supporters on one side, Trump supporters on the other. These are all white folks, and they were throwing down too, you know. But the whole kind of that confrontational me, us against them vibe, when people need to, we're still the same country. You know, that whole, I guess the whole decorum of service and the whole decorum of the United States and the facade of, yes, we all are on opposite sides, but we come together after this time. Clearly that was thrown out the window, right? Because you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do certain things where you're trying to work with the other part, where you don't really have the best interest of the nation at hand. Clearly, the Republicans didn't have the best interest of the nation at hand when they decided that they would never work with Barack Obama. They weren't trying to serve all of America. They were trying to serve a certain section of America, a certain portion of America. And that portion sometimes didn't even include their own people who had the commonality of the people that were on the other side, meaning that everybody is out of work now. Some be Republican, some are Democrat, but a lot of the positions that the Republicans are taking are even screwing up their own supporters. Let's talk. Look at Mitch McConnell not wanting to deal with the new stimulus package, right? He didn't even want to. They didn't even want to vote on that, and a lot of their supporters are unemployed, homeless. So clearly, they don't have the concern for the day-to-day needs of their own people.
It's
just as long as they screw up the other side.
Yeah, I mean, and the selfishness of it all is that the concept for which the current administration and the GOP, who are co-signing along the dotted line with them, are all under the same notion that we'll survive the infection because of we're going down with the concept of the crowd immunity concept. So we'll get everybody infected. My concern now is that 1 in 5 of the cases of 230,000 is an African-American, a person of color, 1 in 5 dead. That's 46,000, damn near 50,000 dead brothers and sisters as a result of somebody who's asleep at the wheel.
That's right.
Not to mention sleep at the wheel. That also the vaccines being created. I want to know how many of them are African American patients and volunteers.
In trials.
Because it seems, the trials situation says to me that all of a sudden the vaccine ain't for me. It's not for my people of color. If we're the one impacted the most, the vaccine, it seems like it's just going to be protecting them, not us. So I have very grave concerns about the efficacy and the efficiency and the ethics of it all based on previous situations, smallpox and Indian blankets, Tuskegee experiment, Mississippi appendectomy, sterilization of black women. Now, you want me to really go down this road? And by the way, since we're on this road, I got a real big bone to pick of the GOP and the president. That blue flag, that blue stripe flag, that one that you flew at one of your rally stops, that's the Confederate flag. We got one flag in this nation, whether you like it or not. Blue flag, blue stripe flag is another symbol for Ku Klux Klan. It's another symbol for the bars and stripes of the Confederacy. How dare you use that as a symbol? You want to get mad at us for kneeling? How dare you bring that flag into our visuals?
Yeah, but
that's
they're making it.
That's treason.
They make it obvious.
Yes, and it was obvious.
It's not treason. It's what they want to do. I mean, you could call it treason if you're really living by what you say, and they call it treason. But you know, we know that they do differently than what they say they don't, what they tell you to do, right? Their actions are much different than what they claim. So you know, I mean, to us, when it includes someone on the other side of them, yeah, it's treason. But when it includes what they're doing, it's not treason. You know, it's like you talked about Trump and those guys or the GOP. The point I want to make is that they're not even concerned about the people that support them. They're basically, they use those people, right? But when it comes to being concerned about their own health and stuff, you know, you've heard the president say, well, you know, I'm usually way back from the people, so, you know, I don't have to worry about, you know, don't have to worry about catching the disease. And this is when he said to the reporter, I'm a little concerned about how close you are. They're only concerned about themselves, right? And this is when the classism comes into place. Like, we don't have to be amongst the masses, you know? And if we are, we have the hookups with the cures and the vaccines, so we don't really need to worry about the masses. And clearly that's the position that they're taking. If you know that the disease is going, spreading like it, the way it's spreading, and you're not doing anything to make sure it doesn't spread, instead you're lying to people and telling them that it's going, we're rounding the curve, we're rounding the corner, and it's getting ready to be over and done with and all this other stuff, when you know it's not, when you've known that since January, that it was a devastating disease, and you took no actions other than telling people it was a hoax when people actually found out how devastating it was, and then made fun of people who wanted to support themselves and protect themselves, literally make fun of people that wanted to put the mask on. I mean, just listen to how they talk about people. You know, Mark Meadows on TV, yeah, Joe Biden, he's got a big white mask, you know, one of the biggest, or in the debate, President, he's got one of the biggest masks I've ever seen. Really? Is that really? You say you're trying to help people with the COVID, but when someone is trying to protect themselves, you make them feel bad about it? I mean, that should be there should be no question that they don't care about anybody but themselves. That should be obvious. So, you know, it should be interesting how, I mean, these people want to intimidate people. I live in a building where someone decided to put some literature up, Blue Lives Matter. Okay, I believe in Blue Lives Matter, but under the circumstance, it kind of was coming from a certain narrative. Then they put up articles about police getting shot and BLM, and so you could see where the person was coming from. We got 90 seconds. We overtalked the show, everybody. But we're going to talk about more of this stuff. We just want to touch on a lot of subjects for people to consider and a lot of points when you're thinking about where we are in America and these past 4 years of politics, because it's going to continue. You've got to be aware of what's going on. You got to pay attention. You got to learn about the system and how to work it. Byron, you want to give the people your send-off here? We got a minute to go.
It comes back to one reality, my friends. You have the power to make the change happen. Now is your time to come to the aid of your nation, your neighbors, and your countrymen. Vote. It's as simple as that, and your change will happen.
There it is, Brother Byron Saunders. We're going to do another show before the week is out because the election is on Tuesday, so we want to keep people abreast and put our little information in. Byron, I'll talk to you again, my brother.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you all. Peace out and love always.
All right. Take care. This has been Kay's Son and Friends. That was my brother Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. I believe, you know what, I believe our brother, the legendary newsman Wayne Gilman, was probably online voting. So we're going to get back with you folks. I want to say thanks for listening to Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Citizen Eric, Citizen Payne, Kay's son. And get out there and vote if you haven't voted. And, you know, stay strong with it. Stay strong. Because this really is only the beginning. Struggle continues. We'll talk to you again.